Welcome to ESPN's number one challenge podcast, episode 12. I am Billy Gill. I'm joined by Charlie, Chunky Dog Q, Charlie, the Dragon Kravitz, and Eliz. We have a very special episode this week. I know if you're listening to this and you've heard these episodes before, I always say it's a really special episode and I always say I'm really excited about the guest. Guys, I'm really excited about today's guest. And if I'm going to be honest with you, I think that we've just been very lucky with timing with a lot of these guests, because this week's guest is Casey Clark, who had an incredible episode this week. And we've been talking to her for a couple weeks and things just haven't worked out. And then here we are. We get her this week when she had probably her biggest episode of the season.
Phenomenal athlete. We heard Fessy talk about it last week. The best female athlete he's ever seen, which, as you know, we are the number one home for amazing athletes on the challenge. So I am excited, very excited to talk to Casey.
This is a perfect week to get her. Somehow we stumbled into Casey being in the center of drama when she seems to be a pretty chill, no drama person.
She went weeks without being on screen on the show. Like, there were 3 weeks when she was barely mentioned, and now she's the star of the season.
So you know what's interesting about that Fessy kind of touched on it last week that I had never really considered, is we have a lot of these people that we like view as kind of floaters throughout the season. And I never thought about it until he said it, that the show is just trying to get out the storylines of the people that are going to get eliminated early on, that are like the marquee names of the series while they still have them. So like, you'll have a Melissa, you'll have, you know, Casey, who's a beast. She's probably going to be in the finals. And we don't really hear from them. And it's not because of them. It's because you want to make sure you get in the CT storylines, the West storylines, the banana storylines, and all those storylines early on. By the way, we'll get to it when we get to elimination. We were talking about how Melissa seemed like she's like this, you know, very passive, not aggressive, until last episode where she was going head-to-head with Josh. And then this week in elimination, spoiler alert, prediction alert, I don't remember exactly how that works.
Everyone hear that? Spoiler alert.
She takes MMA classes, apparently.
Yeah. She's spicy.
I don't think that was a spoiler.
I don't know how it works, and I just don't want to get yelled at. So, like, prediction alert, spoiler alert, all the alerts.
I thought you were going to get a spoiler.
I didn't know where we were going. It would have been a spoiler if you would have talked about how the elimination ended, but the spoiler alert was just that she'd been taking mixed martial arts classes.
Well, no, because I said we found it out in the elimination, so I spoiled for people who chose not to watch the show but chose to listen to this podcast. They now know further along she's going to get into elimination. Spoiler alert.
What if we did a Melissa workout routine alert? So now rewind your pod, go back to the, and then listen to this all back again.
Yeah.
I'm really hopeful that's the only time this alert ever needs to be used.
Which one?
You never know.
I don't even remember. Melissa workout.
Melissa workout routine alert. I think that's what it is.
Let me write that down.
Yeah, just write that down. Hey, while you're writing that down, Eliz, do you have any opening thoughts for us?
Nope.
All right. Might as well get to the episode recap then, huh?
Yeah, I think we can actually start with Melissa if we want to start with that. How funny was it, guys, that we started with Melissa sitting on a couch with Josh after what we saw the week before? They're cool now.
It makes me think that this is just made up, because they were just like eating like no big deal. They're best friends again. When last we checked, not the case at all.
So this is my giving MTV editors the benefit of the doubt brain, is I feel like everything past the de-editing out of the show is like been, you know, I always, whenever there's a weird edit, I think, oh, this has to be because of D in some way, shape, or form. But then the more I thought about it, I'm like, no, D has nothing to do with the Josh-Melissa relationship.
Yeah, no, I think they were just chill and hanging out on the couch, and they needed to focus on Nani, Melissa, and Bailey, because those are the three women without red skulls, and it's a female elimination week. And coming off of her making fun of Josh and doing the snake impersonation, she was just cool with him. But that also brings us to our daily challenge, because after we sort of focused on the storylines of the women who needed skulls, we went to one of my favorite challenges they've done in a while, because it was essentially a puzzle of cars where you had to get a red car out of a lot and it was blocked in by several black cars. But that is actually, I don't know, did you guys play this computer game when you were kids? Because it was a game called Rush Hour that was on addictinggames.com, and it was literally the challenge they did last night.
I just started nodding because I feel like I've played games like that on my phone, and then you got much more specific, and I started
I thought the question was going to be, have you guys ever done like slide puzzles? Which I was like, yeah, I've done slide. And then it's like, did you play this very specific computer game?
And let me say though, because this was not just that specific. It is the same game. It was getting a singular red car out of lots like that. So it struck a chord with me because this was like, now I'm going to bring you back. It was just me playing these games during like math or science classes when I was in high school.
I think that we finally found the limit to the budget this season, because the way that we were headed, you were really setting up for them just pushing out a red tank amongst a bunch of green tanks, and instead we just got a bunch of clunker cars.
Also, I was thinking in relation to budget in that scene too, where Nelson had the shot where he's like, yeah, I guess we got to go behind this wall because we can't see what they're doing. And I was thinking, this would be like a lot more dramatic if they just had two sets of cars next to each other and they were like competing and watching each other try to solve at the same time. But then I was like, this must have been the point in the season where they're like, okay, we're running low on budget. Like, let's just do the bare minimum.
How badly did TJ want to blow up one of those cars? No pyro.
That would have been hilarious if, as they pushed it out, it exploded. Although that probably would have been highly hazardous as well.
So it was a strange weekly challenge because you had massive teams on each side, and then one tribunal was made up of like 8 people, and then only the other 8 people were eligible, I guess, to go in.
I think Nani was going to go in regardless, right? No matter what.
Brilliant production to get Nani, she's a marquee challenger. This is her point in the season where she goes into elimination every single year right before the final. She has like, I need to get thrown into a purgatory or a proving ground or whatever it's called. But yeah, so they split up the teams and there were 2 skullless female competitors, Bailey and Melissa on one team and Nani on the other team. So no matter what, win or lose, Nani could have tanked that challenge and she was going to get the house vote, win the challenge, and she's going to be able to send herself in from tribunal. It's not the storyline, the Bailey versus Melissa storyline. And we know one thing about these MTV producers is that they love these type of storylines.
I love that. Every week we have a moment where Charlie's like, there's one thing that either the producers or TJ Lavin likes. It's this thing. And it always changes. And I love that about this show. So
can I tell you one thing about that thought process?
Please do.
That's when I get caught up in the air and I don't know how to dismount from a point and I just sort of stammer and don't break the tape and are meandering for someone to start talking, but you guys are staring at me like, what's he about to say? And I have nothing.
So you just throw in one thing.
Yep. Well, it's better than 2 things because then I don't have to come up with the second thing.
Well, that's a great point.
Here's one thing about the daily challenge. Everybody seemed to know how to figure out the puzzle, except the people that they assigned figuring out the puzzles to, which was really strange because I don't know why that would be any team's strategy. And both teams seem to have the same strategy. We're going to assign this to Rogan for some reason. And my wife, not part of this podcast, turned to me and said, why is Rogan the one that's most qualified to do this? And everyone on the team seemed to know how to figure it out, except Rogan.
To be fair to Rogan, it's hard to think when people are trying to tell you how to think. So that makes it difficult. But I think we also texted this in the group. Didn't know that Rogan was a puzzle guy. I think maybe we've seen a little bit of that in the season, but theoretically he's a puzzle guy. And then again, Fessy, we love Fessy. We are on record. We love Fessy on this podcast. But I don't see Fessy as a puzzle guy. And we get into the actual challenge itself, and clearly Bailey is who has you know, the elimination on the line, takes over. But it was just interesting to me how they open up and they're like, this guy's going to be our puzzle guy. And you're like, really?
To push back, though, Rogan might be a puzzle guy. He might be a puzzle guy for 2 reasons. One, the way that show was edited last night, it made it look like he was sort of, you know, buffoon, just like pushing cars in random directions, thinking he knew it was figured out. But they ended up winning that challenge. So it was clearly a little bait and switch by the editors there to make us think that Rogan was struggling more than he was. Also, Rogan notably dominated the puzzle in the final last year that led him to the canoe and led him to winning $250,000. So he might have a little bit more game than we're giving him credit for. And I think that his actions are so like up and down in sort of his altruism that I just don't think he's as good of a puzzle guy as he might actually be.
We're also taking them at their word when Jenny, Anissa, and Bananas are like, you just move this car here, that car here, this car here, that car there, and you're out. And I knew it. And it's like, I mean, did you know? Because if you were in that position, I don't know that that would have worked or not.
Also, how great was Bananas getting really upset with first Jenny and then Anissa and be like, okay, wait, but wait a second. What if we did this? And it's like just drenched in irony. Like, are we going to let Rogan do the puzzle or not? Like, what's it going to be?
Kyle had one of the best lines that we've had all season when he said that their strength and their weakness was, he goes, our strength is we have me, Fessy, and Josh on this team to move the cars. Our problem is we have me, Fessy, and Josh to figure out this puzzle.
Did you see, so two shout outs to Fessy's Twitter account. Go follow him at Fessy Fitness. One was that he was like, you know, Kyle's low key one of the funniest people on the challenge. And that was the line they were talking about. Second was, had a great tweet about going out with his girlfriend being like, you know, are you flirting with girls? And then it's showing him at the bar just dumping a bag of nacho cheese Doritos into his mouth, which was just amazing. Same wavelength. Fessy, we love you for your fitness. We also love you for your dietary habits.
I love the bar scenes. Even the bar scenes last night.
There's one thing he loves.
two things today, Billy. First, we've got addictinggames.com. I have no idea if that website still exists. The second is watching bananas stir the pot with a country club pour of Merlot at a bar in Prague.
If you are listening to this podcast right now, can you please pause it and go to addictinggames.com and see if you can find the game that Charlie Kravis is referring to and then tweet it at us. And the first person that tweets it at us,
No prizes.
Just a retweet. But that's, you know, that's worth something on the internet.
Anyways, so
Rogan's team won by 13 seconds.
That meant Nani got to be in the tribunal and throw herself into elimination. And we had to deal with the drama of whether or not she would face off against Melissa or Bailey.
The tribunal this week was completely useless because there was only three people that were eligible. And spoiler alert, prediction alert, Melissa workout alert. When they put D in there, this was one of the most de-edited things that we've seen this season where they just basically come back to commercial and very quickly like somehow explain to us, well, there's only three people eligible, so these are the people. And they showed D and they showed, I think, Jenny asking her a question or just making a statement. D didn't say a word. They did kind of like the pan and then they were on to the next person and that was it.
That is the trademark edit of the tribunal. Let's get in our nerd video editing hats on right now. And so if you're in the position of someone who is on the tribunal, there is a pillar at the far right side of the seating area. And you know the tribunal scene is always going to cut to the next person when they do that slow move to the right and then you go behind the pillar. And it was just so funny watching Dee just sitting there just like nodding her head and then here we go. The move's off and she's off the scene. It's just hilarious.
There was one line 2D in that scene, and it was Josh saying, hey, D, you know this isn't personal. And it's like, yeah, of course. There are only three people we could nominate.
Josh.
Can I detour on the second on the Josh front? Because I feel like the MTV editors are playing a prank on us because I feel like Josh's first soundbite every single week is like, yo, I got to get this Red Skull, bro. Like, it's every single week. He's like, that's all I'm thinking about. I'm just thinking about this Red Skull, bro. And it's like, yeah, Josh, have to have one to make the final. Like, why even say it?
Also, Josh, Women's Week. You're not eligible this week. So just take a couple days off, buddy.
He was like, I need one, too. There better be another.
It's like, well, Josh, you know, you're still here, so probably another week, so...
It was so great. So great. And then we ended up seeing the drama unfold between Casey and Bailey, which we'll get to talk to Casey about in a little bit. But Casey ended up giving her vote to Melissa because it was a better matchup for Nani in the elimination. And I don't know if we've seen something quite like this before. They were wearing like nylon suits, which had skulls attached to them, and they had to retrieve the five skulls off of their competitor.
I didn't understand the rules at all. I don't know if you guys did. I didn't get it whatsoever. I thought I missed something. I thought it was the first person. I thought you had to run it back to like the pedestal. It just kind of seemed like you take off a thing and then whatever you want to, hey, everybody's tied.
They didn't explain it well on the front end, but then as it went on, and I'm curious what your thoughts are on the strategy, because I feel like the play was bring your opponent to the outside of the ring and then either fake or just try to grab and then just jump out of the ring before they have a chance to grab one off you. It had nothing to do with the pedestals on either end. It was just try to get one and jump out so they can rule the play dead and they don't have a chance to grab another skull and then you're good.
I totally agree. It made no sense. And like there was very little strategy to it. There's very little wrestling. There's a lot of avoidance. But the pedestals were what got me too because they were sprinting back to them at the beginning. But with the final skull, spoiler alert. Melissa pulled the final skull off of Nani, she just sort of laid there and held it up to the sky and was ruled victorious by TJ. There was no bringing back to the pedestal at all.
I think TJ actually stopped them.
Yeah, it was weird because at first I thought that you had to be the first one back to the pedestal. So I'm like, just kind of hang out by your side of the pedestal, take it off there, and then just take a step, put it on the pedestal. You didn't need to put it on the pedestal. Everybody got as much time as they wanted to run outside of the circle. It was a strange elimination. By the way, I have a prediction alert, Melissa exercise alert. spoiler alert if you guys want it. Are you ready?
Bring it.
Yes.
All right. I don't think that Bailey's going to get voted in for Red Skull because she doesn't seem to have the numbers on her side. And I feel like we're going to get to a point where Dee doesn't seem to be liked very much in the house at this moment. And they've edited it out. But the last time that we saw Dee on there, she seemed to be making enemies. I think that they're going to try to get her pushed off the show. And Bailey is going to kind of be a victim of that and not get an opportunity to go in.
I totally agree. And even after last night's episode, by ostracizing her Big Brother alliance, she's just not going to have the votes. She's just not going to have the votes, period. And she's going to be the one that TJ sends home, and I just don't think that's going to go great.
Well, because at this point, it's a favor to be put in there, right? And she hasn't curried any favor with anyone, so why would they do her a solid and put her in just because?
I feel like we're still in the prediction alert zone. This is a continuation of the same prediction slash spoiler alert. If you're still, if you tune back in, you're like, hey, we're clear now. No, you're not. We know there's a double elimination this week. We know there's still a hall brawl out there. We had Fessy last week talk about there may be another hall brawl, and he was talking about the men's side. I think we're going to get an explosive double hall brawl this week. And Boy, am I excited for that.
It's been done before. As a historian, it's been done before when they do the both gender elimination, and it is the best, especially before the end, because the eliminations take on a certain weight when TJ's like, you survived this hall brawl, you're in my final.
That's a great TJ impression.
Thank you.
I have a quick question, not at all about this episode, but about our spoiler alert.
Okay.
We do an entire segment that's recapping the previous episode. So is this entire podcast a spoiler alert? I think spoiler alert is if we know something outside of the episode that has previously occurred.
First of all, can never be too safe, right? You know, just in case you made it this far, you don't know what's going on, you're trying out this podcast for the first time, better be safe than sorry. I think it's kind of like, you know, the little sticker they put on like a hairdryer or something. It's like, hey, don't put this in the water. It's like, yeah, we all kind of know that. But just in case.
That's fair.
Don't put this hairdryer in the water. So
that is fair.
Don't put this hairdryer in the water alert. We'll add that to the list of alerts.
That's a great analogy.
This podcast is going to become 57 minutes just because we have four alert names.
Should we get the guests maybe? Probably.
Should we talk to Casey alert?
Let's talk to Casey alert. So in the history of the guests we've had on this podcast, we've had a lot of phenomenal athletes, right? This next guest might be the best of all of them because we just had Fessy on last week, and he said that this person is perhaps one of the greatest athletes I've ever seen. So happy to be joined now by Casey Clark. Casey, just to start right there with your athletic background, we read somewhere, is it true, you lettered in five different sports in high school?
Yes, I did. And did Fessy really say that? Oh, look at him saying nice things about me.
Fessy legitimately said, she is the most athletic woman I've ever seen in my life. We were talking about the daily challenge last week, but he was very complimentary of you.
Oh, that's awesome. Yes, I did letter in five different sports in high school. I mean, I've been playing sports my whole entire life, and I wanted to play everything, but you know, you only had three seasons. So I'm like, you know what? I'm going to make it happen. I'm going to switch it up. And I ended up playing field hockey, soccer, basketball, track and field, and softball, and lettered in all of them. So it's amazing. I love it. I love sports.
We've seen a lot of your tackle football highlights, like from the women's football leagues you played in. But obviously, that's like not always a sport that's available to young girls. At what point did you decide to get involved in that? Or were you one of the girls that was like, I'm going to play with the boys anyway from a young age?
Yeah. So ever since I was younger, I always loved playing catch. Always loved playing. But you know, and then in high school, I wish I would have played, but it wasn't really accepted, right? I mean, still to this day, it's really not a thing where girls are, hey, let me go play football with the guys. And so, I just never played in high school. And then when I got out of high school, my dad heard about this women's full tackle football, and it was something that you get to try out for. And I ended up trying out for it, met the team, and, absolutely loved it. And I made the team. So, I mean, this was back in 2010. Too. So, I mean, I'm so glad that I had the opportunity to be able to play, but I wish I would have been able to play in high school. It just didn't happen that way, but I love it, man. I love it. You throw on pads, and I mean, it's a whole nother level. I love it.
So one of the cool things I think about the challenge, and you'll hear a lot of the competitors say it, is that, you know, they think they can be professional athletes. You are a professional athlete. But the difference between that and Big Brother, which is where a lot of America got to know who you were, is Big Brother is more of like a strategic thing where you're not really showing off a ton of your athleticism. Like you'll have a veto or whatever where you have to come in and you have to compete. But sometimes it's not based on that. It's like just dumb luck, some of them. You know what I mean? Like the ones where you roll and you have to get a high number. So what is the big difference to you between, I guess, the challenge and Big Brother and the way you play them and go into and prepare for them?
Well, see, with Big Brother, I mean, even with both of them, even though you're a really good athlete at something, it doesn't mean that you're going to do amazing on the challenge or on Big Brother, right? So that's why I knew even before going on Big Brother, I said, my strategy is going to be my social game. I know my social game will take me to the very end. Even though I'm good at games and I'm very athletic, that alone will not take me to the very end. So why would I bank on that, right? So with the Big Brother, I was like, okay, my social game is going to take me to the very end, and the competitions will come as a bonus. And so I did the same thing, you know, on the challenge. I'm just like, it's the exact same thing. You're playing a game with human beings that have emotions, that have feelings. So that's my main priority is, you know, building relationships. It taken me to the end, even though, I mean, challenges, yeah, it's good to win some, but it's not the whole entire thing. You can win all the challenges and you can still be sent home, you know? So it's similar in a lot of ways for me. And my strategy was just the same. I mean, simply just be myself.
Have you enjoyed one of the shows or participating in one of the shows more than the other so far? I know you're early in your challenge career, but maybe Big Brother holds a special place in your heart because you won it all.
Yeah. Yeah. No, Big Brother is my first love. It really is, because I've been watching Big Brother since I was 10 years old, and I literally watch no other TV except that show. For some reason, it gets my ass to like sit down. So I feel like I've been studying it for the past, 20 years. And then with the challenge, I mean, it's amazing as well, but Big Brother is my first love for sure. And I didn't really watch the challenge like that. Like, right before going on, I watched one season from the beginning to end, but that's about it.
So would you do Big Brother again? Because there's rumors that there's going to be an all-star season potentially.
I know, there is a lot of rumors. I'm like, I have no idea. So, I mean, if they ask me to come back, I mean, why wouldn't I, you know? So we'll see.
Pivoting to like last night's episode too. What was it like watching back last night's episode? Did you watch it live?
I did watch it. Last night's episode, man, it was very interesting. I didn't like the actions that I did, and I take full responsibility. You know, I'm in a relationship, and for me to do, you know, what I did, it hurts me. You know, it hurts me because I know it hurts my girlfriend, and it just wasn't the right steps and the right moves that I should have done. And I take full responsibility. That is not okay what I did. And it's really hard, you know, TV is a hard period. And just being, you know, in that bunker and being away from family and friends and just being just stuck in this mind, you know, where you're just mentally, emotionally and physically just drained. And again, that doesn't give me an excuse for the, you know, my actions, but I take full responsibility. You know, I'm not perfect. And you go in there and it's hard. It's hard not having your best friend in there. And it just came down to that. But and then on the other part, I mean, last night was an interesting episode. There was just so much going on. And then the whole thing with like Bailey and me not giving her the vote, which I just realized they edited out a lot of the reasons why I voted for Melissa. MTV, man, I specifically explained why I voted the way I did. They completely cut that out. It's totally fine. But it's frustrating. I mean, after all of that, everything I saw last night, even though the drama with Bailey and all these things, people are like, oh, you weren't loyal. I mean, she tried turning on me first. Why would I want to give someone a vote that wasn't even working with me? But obviously they cut that out. The whole thing is my girlfriend, you know, and just the feelings that, you know, watching that, it's heartbreaking. And I take full responsibility, and I'm a person for doing that. So
I think that's just to kind of expand on that a little bit, because, you know, obviously you're here taking responsibility, and that's like, you know, an amazing thing. But there has to be to some degree, because we hear people, you know, some of the guests who come on and talked about it, say that there are people that play this game to get a call back, or they're playing this game in a certain way to get portrayed in a certain way, you know, by the editors at MTV. So it seems like part of that, part of what can add to your character, part of what can add intrigue are those sort of house relationships where, you know, you can get more screen time in doing that. So what I'm curious about is, are there conversations either that you've had with your girlfriend or that you know that have happened between other cast members and their significant others about, when I go to this place, I'm going to do a certain amount of flirting because that's what's conducive to screen time. Like, do conversations like that happen before you go on a season?
No, because I get what you're saying, though, because I know there's sometimes I've heard people say, oh, hey, I've told my significant other that I'm going to do whatever it takes to win this. And yeah, I know some people have that conversation. But again, I don't like to go, you know, I go on to these shows. I don't like to be someone that I'm like, that I'm not, right? I'm going in there being, you know, 100% who I am, and being in a relationship. I don't want to disrespect any of that. Now, when you go in there and it's like, it's just crazy. I mean, you got the MTV and the producers always trying to ask you these leading questions of, oh, who's beautiful? Oh, how do you feel about this person? How do you, you know, so they're always trying to create this storyline, and they literally pushing for this whole Nani and Casey thing. And this is what they want. This is what they want. And it was nothing more than just us being really, really close friends. I mean, it's unfortunate it has come down that way, and they can pull things out, you know, they can make things seem bigger than what it really is. But I guess that's TV, man.
The one you should be upset with is Asaf, because if he would have stuck around a little longer, you wouldn't have been in the spot.
Exactly. Oh, yeah. So funny. Asaf.
I got a question about the Big Brother Alliance. Like, we've heard sort of differing levels of how committed people are throughout this entire season. Was there like a group chat before you all got in the bunker being like, we got each other's back, or how deep was that?
Yeah. So we spoke about it, and it's so funny because I keep reiterating this all on my, like my social media or whatever, but they're not airing. Like I said it so many times on MTV in my interviews, everything. And they're not even airing it because they don't want to, they want the whole like this crazy, you know, drama. Anyways. So yeah, we did talk before going in. We're like, Hey, we're Big Brother. Let's stick together as much as possible. Now, I didn't work with any of these people on Big Brother on my season. Right. So I'm like, I mean, we're going into this thing as like, I'm literally like, hey, let's all stay loyal to each other and see how far we can go. And my mindset is always like, I'll work with you guys until you do me otherwise, right? And if you do me otherwise, then I got to cut ties. And so we're like, okay, let's have each other's back as much as possible. And we even said, hey, we're going to be apart from each other and not, you know, make it so obvious, because people obviously know that we're all coming in together as Big Brother. Let's not make it obvious. So that's what we were doing. And then all of a sudden it becomes a problem. But then we had the reunion, but I had to I had to bring it back up to Bailey. Like, hey, Bailey, remember we said this and we said that? And so she ended up throwing my name under the bus, saying, you know, trying to get me to go back into purgatory, saying things like, oh, she already has $500,000 and I gave her this and all these things. And if we're supposed to be working together, you shouldn't be throwing my name under the bus. And that's exactly what happened. And that's why I was okay with voting for Melissa and not Bailey, because I even told her I couldn't trust you. And when we were doing the voting, they got the one clip of me just saying, I just don't trust you in the game, when I said exactly what, there was more reasons of why I had to vote for it. Of course, they didn't air that, which is fine. But again, I was totally loyal. And me and Josh talked about it too. It was like, we were loyal to them until they did us otherwise. And we asked them if they were working with Wes, they said no. And they were. So why would I continue to work with someone that's throwing me under the bus? So, I mean, it is what it is, whatever. But it's unfortunate how it had to come down to that way, because we all came in there to like, hey, let's have each other's back as much as possible. Cool. As much as possible. Not if you throw me under the bus, I'm not going to still be like, hey, you know what, Bailey, even though you threw my name under the bus, here's the vote for you. Like, it doesn't make any sense. That's not how I roll.
Like you said, even though you were working with them on the challenge, Fessy and Bailey and Swaggy were not part of your alliance on Big Brother. Right. So total hypothetical. How do you think Tyler and Angela would do on the challenge?
I think they would do amazing. I mean, you know, challenge-wise, I know they probably wouldn't like the drama in there. I was very hesitant myself, because when they asked me to go on, I was like, I don't know if I want to go on there because of the drama. And not that I can't handle it, but more so like, why would I want to put myself in a situation like that? So, I mean, Tyler and Angela, they would definitely be able to handle themselves, but I don't think they would fully like it. They would love the challenges, but the drama that comes with it and the storyline that everyone just tries to play out, I don't think they would be a big fan of it.
It's interesting that you say you wouldn't want to put yourself like in that spot, because we've seen you now on two, I'd say, high stress environments that you put yourself in, the Big Brother house, now the Challenge House. And this is like unlike any of the Challenge Houses we've seen before. And we've never really seen you blow up. You seem to be very cool headed, like calm. Like even yesterday when you were kind of like in a heated exchange, you seemed level headed the entire time. How do you keep from losing it, I guess, when you're in these environments? Yeah.
That's a great question. I'm very good at controlling my emotions. You know, I can't control what other people do and how they react, but I can control on how I react to certain things. And, you know, it's not easy, you know, but until you disrespect me, but I know that's how Bailey communicates. Why would I want to speak down to her level and scream and do it? It doesn't make any sense, because I know, you know, I stay true to who I am, and what I say is straight up facts, you know. And yeah, I feel like she just gets worried with, you know, what she says, what she doesn't say, and she has to kind of backtrack. And in order to just cover all of that, she has to scream over people, and it's just not how I roll. But yeah, I mean, I just control my emotions very well on Big Brother and on the Challenge.
It seems like things with you and Bailey have not been resolved.
No. And I mean, I'm okay with it. I do not lose sleep over her and what they got going on, honestly, because I steer far, far away from negativity. I steer far, far away from, you know, just like that, because I like to have control of who the people I surround myself with, and it's good vibes only. Like, they can talk all the stuff they want to, use my name, go ahead and drag whatever you need to, but at the end of the day, I'm good over here. So I don't see us ever being friends, but we can still be cordial. But I know that I would accept it before she would, right? And that's just how it is.
So I do have one question. You sent Melissa into that elimination, and you're watching it back, and you're like, oh, my God. Is this stressful for you knowing that she's 3.5 months pregnant, even though you know it turns out fine?
yeah, I mean, because we had no idea. But now to hear that she was pregnant, it's insane. I mean, there was a couple times she was like sick in there and we just didn't know why, and she had no idea. So, I mean, to hear that news after, it was just like, what? Everything that she went through, like, this is a challenge. You're doing some crazy ass challenges and competitions, and for her to, you know, go through it, and, you know, I'm so glad that the baby is okay, but she's a beast. She's a savage.
She's awesome.
So, Casey, we have some of your football highlights here.
Yeah.
What are some of your like favorite memories from that league? Because it seems like you got some cool stuff on your YouTube page, and you know, obviously you're a wide receiver. What do you from playing that league? And I don't know if you have plans to go back and do that again, but what do you remember most from playing that league?
Just I mean, my adrenaline. Like every game day, I get so pumped up, man. I really do. I mean, there was times where, I mean, I ended up getting this injury where I was in a boot for a whole entire month because I strained like the ligament on the top of my foot. I got tackled and a girl landed on me, whatever. But I thought I was going to be out for the playoffs, and we had playoffs out in Chicago, and I just now been out the boot. I got out of boot probably for like a week, and I was like, I have got to play this game. So I ended up popping a bunch of, like, I had some like ibuprofen, probably like 1800 milligrams of ibuprofen, and took some other stuff too to just take away the pain and to still be able to play that game. And I made a few touchdowns. I mean, we didn't come with the win, but it's like, I have so much love for this game. And when I'm in there, like, my adrenaline goes, and no mercy, honestly. And when I did that hit, I was like, I want to hit her so bad, like so good where she's not even gonna know like where the f- she's at, you know? And so I get so competitive and a lot of people underestimate me because my size, right? They think I'm just like, you know, skinnier Casey, but you know, when I'm blocking, I'm one of the best blockers out there, and to be able to, you know, pop someone from jump, and they don't mess with me for the rest of the game. But I show my strength in the very beginning. I love the adrenaline rush, and I love every single thing about it. You know, throwing on pads and no mercy when I hit somebody.
Do you think you surprised anyone this season of the challenge? Because they didn't know you were a rookie and you came in, and they were probably like, you know, originally they always throw in the rookies, but now there's a twist where you need the red skull. Did you surprise anyone with your athleticism?
I know at first, because when people look at me, they can tell that I'm athletic, you know, and then not, you know, going there as a rookie, they see me, you know, I'll be working out or I'm like, you know, juggling a soccer ball or whatever. And they start to see like, oh, Casey is athletic. And, you know, now that after we start doing challenges, they start to see that, you know, I can pick up things pretty well. Yeah, there's a couple times where girls were like, oh man, Casey, you're just good at everything, or you're able to, you know, pick this up. I mean, it's no secret, but I know people probably underestimated me because everyone underestimates the rookies. Everyone underestimates big brother players, first of all. When big brother goes on the challenge, they're like, oh, I'll get these big brother players out of here. And so it feels good to, you know, kind of show them what's up.
Speaking of picking stuff up quickly, I was watching some YouTube video and it said that you picked up field hockey the week of tryouts your freshman year of high school and made the varsity team.
Yeah, I made varsity, yeah. Honestly, I've never even heard of the sport of field hockey. I'd never heard of it. And my dad was like, oh, you should go try it, because I was going to try volleyball, but I didn't do volleyball. And I tried out for field hockey, and I made varsity. And then that same, I think, you know, I was doing like Junior Olympics, and I was getting a lot of like letters and stuff for like from colleges for field hockey. I was like, no, no, no. Look, I'm not going to be wearing a kilt, you know, for the rest of my life. People are like, it's a skirt. No, it's not a skirt. It's a kilt. But I mean, I think I get it from my dad. My dad is, you know, he was very athletic and just picks up things very well. So I'm very thankful.
We had polar opposite experiences. I played field hockey freshman year, made the freshman team. And then when I tried out as a sophomore, they were like, do you want to be team manager? So polar opposite experience. Anyways.
Oh, my God.
So you were recently in Miami. When we talked to Fessy last week, he was, you know, getting ready to pack up from Orlando to drive down to Miami and hang out with you and Josh and Maddie. So who are some of your closest friends from the challenge outside of the show?
Like, I hung out with, like, Tori, Jordan. They're super cool. Love them. You know, besides, like, Maddie, amazing. We had such a good week in Miami. I mean, just good vibes all around. You got Maddie, Josh, Bessie. You know, I still talk to Jenny. It's just like, you know, here and there, we'll talk to each other on social media. Everyone's cool, man. I got along with everybody in there. You know, I was a little hesitant with the whole drama thing, but I was like, it's really not that bad. They just want to pinpoint like the drama, but I got along with everybody in there. The only drama that we had was just, you know, with the Bailey and Swaggy thing.
How often does that go on? Like, how much downtime do you have between, like, random outbursts like that? Because you watch on the show and you see everybody, like, runs down the hall and it's like, holy something's finally going on here. Because, like,
yeah, Rogan was like, get your popcorn ready. Like, he was peeking around the corner.
So, like, Big Brother, for example, like, they'll have, like, those live feeds. And if you tune in, it's like, everyone's just sleeping all day long. So is the challenge like that, where there's not a ton of things going on? So when there's, like, one blow up, everybody's just like, boom.
Yeah. Yes, yes. I mean, I think all of it, majority of it happens when there's alcohol involved, literally. I mean, throughout the day, during the day, everyone's chill, cool, working out or eating or whatever. But, you know, MTV knows what they're doing. Like, hey, guys, here's some wine and some beer. You know, we need some action. You know, we need some action. And I think it's funny, too, a lot of the people on there that have done, you know, the season after season after season, they know, hey, we got to make good TV here. And so everyone likes to do their part. So, I mean, just like, you know, last night, you know, Johnny always saying his little things here and there, even though he doesn't know what the hell he's talking about, but he knows it makes good TV. Him and Wes would always say that. I'm like, what are you guys talking about? This makes good TV. We got to give the people what they want. And I'm like, okay. I mean, so it's so interesting to see it from Big Brother, you know, perspective. And then when you go on to the challenge where you got people doing the same thing over and over every year, and they know this whole storyline. They know when they see a camera, oh, time to turn it on and say what I need to say, because they will potentially use this. So, yeah, it's interesting.
So you just said something that intrigues me in terms of the scheduling of the day. Are there any day drinkers on the challenge? Or is it like...
No,
is it,
they don't let us drink. No.
Oh, really?
Drink during the day. It's all at night. So they don't let us drink the night before a challenge, but like all the other nights, they'll give us some... You know, I mean, they'll limit us. They'll be like, bring out a few like bottles of wine, few, you know, beer here and there. But yeah, nothing during the day. I mean, unless it's our day off.
So we have a segment that we do with all of our guests thus far, as we have found one challenger in particular, just very amusing across the span of the season. And actually, he's sort of had a transformative sort of momentum throughout the season. We had a very sweet moment last night. So I'm going to play a little segment open for you, and then I'm going to prompt you the question here.
What's the deal with Nelson?
The deal.
What the f*** is up with Nelson?
What's up with Nelson? I don't know, but I love it.
Nelson.
What's the deal with Nelson?
So, Casey, that is our what's the deal with Nelson segment. So I'm just going to just put that to you. What is the deal with Nelson?
What is the deal with Nelson? Man, he is definitely a character. He's funny, man. I mean, watching back and you see like all the little things that he's saying that he does. I mean, him blowing up, him saying what he needs to say, him getting stuck in the foam, like not coming out. I mean, first of, you know, him getting, it's just always like something with Nelson. I don't know. He's a good guy. He really means well, but, he's very interesting. He's very interesting. I know at first me and him weren't really, I mean, he was one of the guys that rarely even talked. He didn't talk at all inside there. And, but as, you know, as time went on, I got to know him a little bit, and, he's a goofball. He's funny. He's a character. He really is.
Well, Casey, you've been so great to spend the time with us. I think
you guys are awesome.
I think we might be a field hockey pod now. So
I was going to say that.
if we decided to go deeper on field hockey in the future, we might give you a call back, see if you want to join
us
for that. Really enjoyed watching the season. Looking forward to seeing how the rest of it pans out for you. But thank you so much for spending the time with us.
Thank you guys so much for having me on. This was so much fun. You guys are awesome.
Let's go.
All right, let's go.
All right. Joining us now is the unofficial ESPN's number one challenge podcast statistician, Ryan Brotman. Take it away for Stat of the Week.
So I found this on Reddit from some user named Will Simone. This person put together a data set of every season, every single weekly challenge of the people that have won. So this is hundreds of competitors, hundreds of challenges, everything documented in Excel. So then what we have is the amount of challenge wins that all these competitors have had. I think we have something like 320. And then we have the expected wins. So how that works is that say you have 10 challenges, each of them having 10 people. Assuming everyone has the same chance of winning, every challenge you have a 10% chance, and your expected win total after the 10 would be 1. So we also have all the different challenge percentages for every single challenge over them. And for the people that were in these challenges, you can add up the percentages to get the expected win totals that they should have had. So we're getting deep into the stats this time. And then when you look at all of them, you see the total wins, the expected wins, and the wins above expected. So we have every single challenger here that's been in the show on the 35 seasons. And the number one person is Johnny Bananas. He has almost 17 wins above expected.
Wow. You're basically telling us Bananas is like the Mike Trout of the challenge.
Exactly.
Wow.
I don't know about that. If you look at Evan, though, Evan Starkman, who is an all-time great, half as many appearances.
Great point. So bring up the next one. Bring up the next stat. We have
a great number guy.
To be able to look at the relative one, and you have Evan here. With based on the amount of challenges that he's participated in, he has performed the best.
Wow.
Job, Charlie.
Look at that
guy.
Mr. Krabs is a stat guy.
Yeah.
I'm an aspiring stat guy. Let's just take a moment and pause. Billy, how are you feeling about all these numbers? How are we doing so far?
I mean, so far, so good, I think. Definitely highlighting these things in green helps. So,
green is current season.
Notable ones.
I was going to say, I think green only means that they're on this season. Okay.
Yeah, it's some of the notable ones, but you also have the Paulies, the Cara Marias that are up here at 6 and 7 that have done pretty well. And if we go way at the bottom, all the way at the bottom.
Anissa again. She gets killed by these efficiency stats.
Yeah, not the best. But we also have a few other people, as I love to do, taking shots at Rogan. He's near the bottom. 5 wins below expected. Then we have Jenna, Nelson, and Bear that are in this bottom tier.
Jenna's surprising because we always thought that Jenna was like a sneaky beast, and your stat is saying that's not necessarily the case.
She's a sneaky beast in the eliminations. She's gone something like 7 of 9.
Wow. Why do I look at that guy? Look at the Vinny Pig, Johnny's cousin, Vince Gliata. He's also a negative player. This is former Penn State safety.
So wow, wait, so stop right there. So Ginny is 3 wins below replacement.
Yep.
Is that correct? That's interesting.
So just because I'm dumb, this is like including daily challenges?
This is only daily challenges.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Well, there you go. So I wasn't following along, apparently.
Billy would like you to start over with that knowledge.
I do think there's an important thing to, if we go back to the top, there's an important thing to note here about with Evan, is that this is when they used to pay out daily challenges. So his wins are certainly, they're different. He was prioritizing daily wins to add cash to the bank account.
We need to have an asterisk and have a secondary stat for daily challenge wins when Burger King is involved, because some people might perform a little differently when BK is on the line.
I like this. If nothing else, Ryan, we're learning about statistics.
Some of us are.
Some of us more so than others.
Some of us are just smiling and nodding.
Okay, so we've learned. Okay, so Johnny is the most efficient.
Yep.
Anissa perhaps the least efficient. Some good takeaways this week. I'm looking forward to seeing what you're going to confuse Billy with next week.
I can't wait.
Guys, if there's one thing I love more than a good stat, it's a great Eliz recipe.
Let's go!
I love how Charlie always gets really close when he says that every week. Anywho, we had the opportunity to chat with Casey this week. I was thinking, what is something that's Casey-themed, Casey barbecue, but I don't really do Kansas City barbecue. We're going to go in that family and do barbacoa.
Oh.
Billy, I need you to bear with me, because when I tell you that this is a slow cooker recipe, you're just going to be alarmed that it takes like 9 hours.
I feel like slow cookers are different, because you do the prep, and the prep I don't really count as like the slow cooking time. So like if you say leave it in there for 8 hours, it's not like an active 8 hours. It's a very passive 8 hours.
Yes. Okay. Agreed.
Two things we learned on this podcast is that Billy doesn't like numbers or slow cookers.
It sounds like he's okay with slow cookers. Or, yeah. He doesn't like long cook times.
I should have phrased that in a better way. Anyways.
People who cook slowly, he doesn't like that. Okay. So I have made this as a pulled pork and as a pulled chicken. So pick your protein of choice. Secret ingredient. You're going to take a cup of Dr. Pepper, cannot be diet, put that into your slow cooker, like a half a cup of water to that. Then you're going to add like 2.5 to 3 pounds of either pork butt, which I giggle every time I hear that, pork shoulder, or boneless, skinless chicken thighs. So all boneless, pick your meat of choice. So you're going to sprinkle the meat with some salt, pepper, garlic powder, maybe some onion powder. Got your Dr. Pepper, your water, shut it. You are going to cook that on low for 8 hours or high for 5 hours. When that time is coming up, you are going to get out your blender and you're going to blend together another cup of Dr. Pepper, a half cup of brown sugar, a small can of green chilies, and a can of enchilada sauce. Blend it till it's smooth, set it aside, take the meat out of the slow cooker, drain whatever liquid is in there, shred the meat. If you've cooked it long enough, you could probably shred it like with some tongs. Don't even need the double fork action, but shred that however you want. Put it back in the slow cooker with this new sauce that you've made in your blender. Cook it on low for another 2 hours. Come back and you have like a little sweet, a little spicy, works for burritos, tacos, salads, quesadillas. This is a knockoff of one of my favorite restaurants in Salt Lake City called Cafe Rio, and they have the best sweet pork barbacoa.
I know exactly what I'm going to do with this recipe. I'm going to get some King's Hawaiian rolls and some Duke's mayonnaise, and I'm just going to put that right in the middle, and that is going to be electric.
You know what I would do? I would make a barbacoa quesadilla.
Oh, there was my, why didn't I consult with you when I couldn't think of a recipe?
It all came back together. That was beautiful.
So that is sweet pork or chicken barbacoa.
Well, now that we got that done, Eliz, you got any final thoughts for us?
I'm going to keep the Casey tribute going. And if anyone watched her on Big Brother, Casey's two favorite words. I feel like I sound like Charlie Kravitz now. Casey's two favorite words. There's nothing Casey loves more than the two words. Let's go. So my final thoughts are work hard, be kind, let's go.
Geico knows there are many reasons why you ride. From the thrill of the revving engine and pure adrenaline of flying down the highway, to the confidence of knowing that Geico always has your back with 24/7 access to claims service. But Ari Snyder has one reason in particular.
I have extremely large upper arms. They won't even fit into most shirts. Thankfully, biking really embraces vest culture, so I feel accepted.
Geico Motorcycle. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.